Hello, everyone, and welcome back to episode 7 of True Crime Tuesday, where this season we're taking a look at the alleged Marconi murders, a series of over 20 deaths of people who all worked in the defense sector for or had connections to Marconi. And the official coroner's findings on each of these deaths is either suicide, sexual misadventure, open verdict, or accidental death. And unbelievably, out of these 20 plus people who sadly lost their lives, not a single one has been labelled a murder, despite the absolute insane ways that many of these people sadly died. I mean, how many times before listening to this podcast have you heard about somebody killing themselves by tying a rope around their neck, around a tree, then getting in their car, jamming a metal pole on the accelerator, and just letting the car go off and decapitating themselves? How often have you heard about somebody committing suicide by filling their car full of cans of petrol and driving headfirst into an empty cafe? Now, you will have heard of people killing themselves by putting a hose from an exhaust pipe into a car window and turning the engine on. You probably won't have heard of someone crawling underneath a car they couldn't possibly have fit under to wrap their mouth around the exhaust. Or at the very least, I will say I haven't. I happen to know, sadly, three people who have committed suicide personally. And although I won't obviously go into details of that, if I asked you to guess how they done it, you'd probably be right within the first three attempts. I think it would be an incomprehensible amount of guesses required for me to say that you would do it like in the decapitation way, with the rope and the car and the bar on the accelerator. But if you think for one moment we've already touched on the most bizarre ways of allegedly killing yourself, you are so wrong. Coming up in episodes 8, 9 and 10, it's unbelievable what you're going to hear and what is being classed as either open verdict, death by misadventure, or suicide. And in our next episode, episode 8, which we will name The Trouble with Electricity, we're going to find out that maybe once again, if we're looking down the line that there are assassins working to kill these scientists, that maybe they made a bit of a mistake in terms of putting two almost identical deaths together in such a short space of time. And two absolutely unbelievable deaths. But for today's episode, I thought what we would do is take a look at everything we've covered so far, but through the eyes of the geopolitical landscape at the time, almost as a refresher episode, so to speak, so we understand where each country sat and also how these deaths seem to occur in almost conjunction with the timeline before we hit the final furlong of episodes 8, 9 and 10. But before we begin today's episode, I want to remind you all about our Patreon. If you head over to patreon.com/crimetuesday, you'll not only find early ad-free releases of everything on this feed, you'll also find access to our Patreon-only podcast, Cold Case, where we take a look at some of the most famous and infamous unsolved crimes throughout history. We've already looked at the likes of the Black Dahlia murder, the plane hijack by D.B. Cooper, and more recently we've looked at the rap rivalry between Biggie Smalls and Tupac Shakur, sadly resulting in the unsolved murder of both of them. Our most recent episode, we looked at the mysteries around the death of Jimi Hendrix. Like me, you probably think it was an accidental overdose. Well, that's what I thought too, until I looked a bit more deeply into the topic, and let's just say there are a few red flags. So if that interests you at all, head over to patreon.com/crimetuesday. As I say, early ad-free releases of all True Crime Tuesday shows, and you can gain access to the entire back catalogue of Cold Case podcasts. All for the price of around a coffee a month. Head over to patreon.com/crimetuesday. But right now, it's time to pick up your pads and your pens, and let's do a little bit of revision before we start the end of the season. This is True Crime Tuesday, I'm Kev Eustace, and this is episode 7, Mutually Assured Destruction. This entire season will focus on the late 80s, and that's essential because the period between 85 and 89 was a critical phase in the Cold War. There were so many really significant geopolitical shifts, evolving relationships, and controversial policies. Central to this whole era, as we've discussed before, was President Ronald Reagan's SDI, or the Strategic Defense Initiative, or as we also know it, the Star Wars program. Today, we're going to look back not only on what we've covered so far, but the whole geopolitical landscape, the beliefs, the differences from countries, the relationships, and the controversies between the USA, the UK, and the Soviet Union during this period, but mainly focusing on the SDI, not just from a Cold War perspective, but for every nuclear-armed country in the world. Because remember, what Reagan was talking about was an initiative that would render any nuclear weapon immobile, basically useless. A huge missile-shaped container of hazardous material and nothing more. First, for anyone still unaware of how big this Star Wars program was, it was announced by Reagan on March the 23rd, 1983. The SDI aimed to develop a sophisticated anti-ballistic missile system which would prevent missile attacks from the Soviet Union. It was meant to remove the one thing that kept nuclear balance, a phrase that you'll have heard, mutually assured destruction. Ironically shortened to MAD. Yes, MAD. And instead it would instigate a defense race as opposed to an arms race. Basically flipping the narrative from how well can you attack to how well can you defend. It's basically Reagan's Cold War judo move. His thoughts being, instead of pumping millions and billions of dollars into more nuclear weapons so we can out-weapon the Russians, let's put it into ground-based and space-based systems to track and destroy incoming missiles. He envisaged a range of technologies, lasers, particle beams, advanced radar systems. Reagan saw SDI not only as a means to secure America's technical superiority, but also to challenge the Soviet Union and their strategic advantage in missile capability. And it was a clever idea in theory. Think about it. If Russia have 10,000 warheads, you could argue the US needs 10,001. Instead, Reagan thought, well, if we can render those 10,000 warheads useless, we just need one. It's actually a genius idea when you think about it. And some people could argue this was even a peace move from Reagan. But be under no illusion, Reagan was a staunch anti-communist. And he believed 100% in exerting pressure on the Soviet Union using military and technological superiority. But also, SDI was a mental as well as a physical move. You see, his aim was to undermine Soviet confidence in their own missile arsenal. The cornerstone of the MAD philosophy. Because if your opposition can shoot down every one of your missiles from the sky, and you don't have that same technology, well, you could treble your arsenal, and it's still useless. Russia could have a million nukes. Meanwhile, the US needs one. Despite the seeming brilliance of the idea, it was never going to be cheap, and therefore it faced criticism even within the US for its feasibility, its cost, and the potential to escalate the arms race, not the defense race. You see, the fear wasn't just the cost, but the time it would take. And in some politicians' mind, well, surely you strike your opponent before they make it impossible for you to do so. The fear, and arguably a correct fear, is that you're basically poking a bear with a stick and saying to the bear, in 3 days' time, I will have a weapon to defeat you. And the bear may well think, well, I'll eat you now then. And this fear was well-founded, because it turned out the Soviet Union did view SDI as a direct threat to its national security. The program was a means to neutralize their strategic missile capabilities, thereby undermining the whole principle of mutually assured destruction. So, in response, the USSR invested in countermeasures, which included developing more advanced missiles, exploring their own space-based defense systems. But they also ramped up diplomatic efforts to gain support against the SDI, claiming, as it removed the principle of MAD, it could ignite a conflict. But this is where Ronald Reagan may have played the military chess move of all chess moves. Because you see, of course he knew how much it cost to start the SDI. He knew that not only would Gorbachev have to react, but he also knew that under Mikhail Gorbachev's leadership, the USSR faced significant economic difficulties, and the enormous cost of competing with SDI added pressure on an already strained economy. So, kind of in a risky move playing this card, Reagan that is, what was Gorbachev's options? Well, ultimately, only one. Or two, if you include striking America with nuclear weapons, which he clearly didn't do, or want to do. Gorbachev would have went down in history as one of the most evil men alive if he had launched a nuclear attack on America based on words of a defense system being created in the future. Because he would be basically condemning millions of people to death on a hunch. Had he went ahead with it, obviously the Russian rhetoric would have been one around a preemptive strike. But that would have fell on deaf ears, because the implication there is we were always going to strike, you just have now started building a defense thing that would make that strike useless. So we'll do it now instead of later. And there is no country in the world who would accept that as a reasonable excuse for killing millions of people. And rightly so. Therefore, Gorbachev was left with just one option, and that was to really pursue nuclear arms reduction negotiations much more earnestly than before. So, although arguably nobody may have foreseen it, unless Reagan is literally a genius, the US, without a single missile fired, have forced the USSR to the table to negotiate the reduction of nuclear weapons. And you could argue that was not only a huge step towards peace, but also meant the US had a moral victory over the USSR. They'd bent them to their will. So now that Gorbachev and the USSR have basically bent a knee and come to the table, almost head bowed, to discuss reducing their nuclear arsenal, we can shelve the SDI project until we find out the USSR's true intentions, right? Well, I'll remind you of a sentence I used earlier. Reagan was a staunch anti-communist who believed in exerting pressure on the Soviet Union using military and technological superiority. So, wrong. For Reagan and Star Wars, the plan remained the same and the timetable remained exactly the same.
Did you know that most vitamin D3 supplements come from sheep's wool? I'm Kat, founder of Ritual. We're making traceability the new standard for the supplement industry. When I was pregnant, I couldn't find a multivitamin I could trust, so I created my own. Ours is made traceable, third-party tested, and clean label project certified. Oh, and our vitamin D3? It comes from sustainably harvested lichen from England, not sheep. Trace for yourself with 25% off at ritual.com/podcast.
How do people feel about getting Big Fitness Energy at Planet Fitness for $15 a month? They feel as thrilled as a kid the first summer they're tall enough to ride the roller coaster. That's right. When you join Planet Fitness right now, you get access to tons of equipment and free fitness training in a clean and spacious club. Don't wait. Join the judgment-free zone today for that all-day energy. Download the free Planet Fitness app and join today for $15 a month.
Hurry. Deal ends September 12th. Join today for $15 a month.
See Home Club for details.
We discussed in our very early episodes about the fact that initially, the British Prime Minister Margaret Thatcher was cautious about the Strategic Defence Initiative. Thatcher was a proponent of nuclear deterrence, and she feared that the SDI might destabilise the nuclear balance. She recognised that if successful, the Star Wars programme would remove the MAD deterrent, a premise that had prevented large-scale conflicts. Even her own advisers stated that the idea itself was doomed. Her advisers told her it was a waste of millions of dollars given the timescales involved, and that by its launch, the USSR would have already found a way around it. However, despite her reservations, she recognised the potential benefits of aligning with the US on SDI. Not only would it reinforce the UK-US special relationship, it would also ensure that the UK kept its high-profile role in shaping NATO's strategic decisions. And this, millions of dollars, well, they may as well be wasted here in the UK. Yet, even though Thatcher was starting to lean to see the benefits of siding with the US in regards to the SDI, she also began facing serious pressure from the Reagan administration. Therefore, Thatcher was kind of split down the middle. One side of her knew it would benefit the UK financially and globally to side with the US, both in terms of that relationship and their role within NATO. On the other side, she knew she'd have to give up something she really held close to her heart, the idea of a nuclear deterrent. But whatever your personal thoughts are on how Thatcher ran the country whilst Prime Minister, and personally for me, it's about a plank length above hell, there is no doubt she was a shrewd negotiator and wouldn't fold under pressure, be it from the Reagan administration or anyone else. Therefore, she played quite a blinding move, really, in terms of she was already leaning towards supporting Reagan and the SDI project, but she would imply she was still 50-50. So, using this I'm still on the fence but could be persuaded state of mind with Reagan's administration, she sought assurances that the SDI would complement, rather than replace, the UK's nuclear deterrent. Well, that was agreed. Win number one for Thatcher. She gets to keep her nuclear deterrent. So then she moves on to the financial things. She said you could have the greatest scientific minds in the UK working in unison towards SDI for a price. And this, through the issuing of defence contracts, was also agreed. And we all heard in an earlier episode an excerpt of Margaret Thatcher addressing the American Congress live on TV, where she stated not only do the UK support the SDI, but she looks forward to the collaboration between our two countries' top scientists to make the thing a success. She's basically went out on record in Congress and said, we agree to the SDI and we also agree that you will be sending us defence contracts. Her speech not only received a rousing round of applause from Congress, it basically also made it as a basic rubber stamp on the idea that America will give defence contracts to the UK. I'm from the UK, obviously, and I've always thought of the UK as the hidden superpower. I know we refer to America as a superpower, rightly so, Russia, rightly so, and China, rightly so. But the UK, for such a tiny island, that I believe would fit in Texas alone seems to hold so much sway in the whole world that if an alien species landed, they would be bewildered how this little tiny island has such a say in what goes on in our everyday lives. That said, I think that same alien life form would find it completely unbelievable that that same tiny island once held, within the last 150 years, what they refer to as the British Empire, and there's that infamous saying, the sun never sets on the British Empire, simply because they ruled over half the globe. And completely aside from this episode, indeed this series in general, it does make me think why the UK is still held in such regard in so many places. Especially, as I said before, the UK would fit three times in Texas. And aside from those three UKs that would fit Texas, there are another 10 states in the US that the UK would fit comfortably in. So it genuinely baffles my mind how we're often seen on level pegging with the US. Hence me referring to the UK as the secret superpower. Something must be there. Jimmy Carr, the comedian, made a very good point. He said that empires don't disappear. They become something else. For example, he says the Roman Empire became a church. And as we all know, the Catholic Church, indeed the Vatican, is one of the richest economies, if you will, in the world. He believes the British Empire became a bank. But not just any bank, the bank. You see, after World War II, when Britain was almost forced to hand back each country it had claimed as part of the British Empire, they did. But they also said to that country, you have cash, why don't you keep it with us? We have a robust banking system. And those countries did. And although as the world progressed and imports and exports didn't really have the same amount of wealth attached to them, one thing that would never ever lose its power or indeed its value or indeed its money-making capability was interest. So former members of the British Empire were given back their sovereignty and they handed their money over gladly to the Bank of England, who would store it safely on their behalf and make a pretty penny in the interest of that money. But it's still mind-blowing that in 2024, an island that would fit three times in the state of Texas alone is considered one of the top three most powerful and influential countries in the world. But secret superpower or not, let's get my focus back on track. So, this SDI deal, the UK now agreeing to side with America, and Russia, rightly so, realising the cost it would take to try and compete in this defence race, and therefore bending at the table to say let's just both reduce our nuclear stockpiles. But think logically, or outside the box, so to speak. We know, as fact, that espionage between countries happens. It's happening right now, somewhere. Given the topic of this podcast, do I believe at the very least some AI or other hasn't flagged it? I do. I don't think it's been flagged to necessarily do anything with, but I'm pretty confident that if you released weekly episodes discussing the KGB, CIA, and MI5, that's going to register somewhere. My point with espionage is both Russia and Britain would have had prior knowledge of SDI through espionage and way before Reagan made his announcement. So let's try for the final part of the show to do a sort of chronological timeline in relation to the so-called Marconi murders and this geopolitical landscape. So firstly, March the 23rd, 83, Reagan announces the SDI. In that speech, he says, "What if free people could live secure in the knowledge that we could intercept and destroy strategic ballistic missiles before they reached our own soil or that of our allies. And this announcement marked a significant shift in US defense policy, emphasizing technological innovation to achieve strategic superiority. 1 month later, in April 1983, Lieutenant Colonel Anthony Godley disappears. The renowned defense expert has never been found and is presumed dead. Now, remember, when we're looking at these timelines, we are theorizing and nothing more. Three main ideas. Either one, the Russians, i.e. the KGB, have decided we cannot afford to compete with SDI, therefore we will kill the people who will help build the thing, and then it can't happen at all. Or, the people within the deep UK government, who are against the whole idea and see it as a waste of time and resource, decide they'll show Thatcher who the real government are beneath the government. And therefore the UK themselves, the Secret Service, have gone out and wiped out these scientists before they can even begin. And the third idea, and it is just an idea, is that those people in America, those congressmen who were against the whole idea, they've sent the CIA over to do the exact same thing, to make sure the SDI never gets off the ground. So if we're looking, obviously, completely theoretically, at who would want to stop SDI taking place, there are three main candidates. Ironically, two of them are the ones trying to build the thing in the first place. In 1984, Reagan was re-elected, and he continued to champion the SDI, even integrating it into the broader US strategic objectives. He initiated intensified research and development efforts, exploring advanced technologies such as high-powered radar, lasers, and particle beams for missile interception. On March the 22nd of the following year, 1985, a top radar designer at Marconi Defense Systems allegedly killed himself with a shotgun. Yes, that was Roger Hill. In November of the same year, we have the death leap of Jonathan Walsh, a digital communications expert working at a top secret facility for BT, or British Telecom, who were working on a joint defense secret project with Marconi. Yes, this is the guy who allegedly died from jumping from his first floor window, yet the Ghanaian coroner said his face had bruises and markings that shown he'd been physically attacked, and also said his death seemed more likely to be a fall from the second floor window. And obviously, when they broke into that second floor apartment, they found messages from him saying, "I'm being kept prisoner, please help." And of course, as any good legal system and justice system in the world would do, the UK coroner decided to not use the Ghanaian coroner's evidence, instead initially declaring it an obvious suicide. I literally picture, almost like a child, this guy walking around with his fingers in his ears going la 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 as the truth is explained to him. It seems irrelevant. Next, at the end of 1985, was the Geneva Summit, where Reagan and Gorbachev actually met and discussed several things, including SDI. Gorbachev obviously voiced strong opposition to SDI, saying it will open up a new phase of the arms race in space. But the Geneva Summit would lay the groundwork for future arms control negotiations. The following year, in August 86, starts what I would term the scientific purge, which begins with the death leap of Vimal Dajibai. Of course, he was a computer software engineer working on guidance systems for torpedoes. And as we discussed in his episode, his death only added to the pattern of mysterious fatalities that seemed to be growing among scientists who were connected to critical defense technologies. 2 months later, the purge continues with the decapitation of Ashad Sharif. Yes, the gentleman who chose the most inexplicable way of killing yourself ever. Well, at least up to now in the series anyway. Interestingly, only a couple of weeks prior to his suicide, was the Reykjavik summit, where again both Reagan and Gorbachev engaged in intense discussions about nuclear disarmament and SDI. Reagan left that meeting stating, SDI is non-negotiable. It's a shield against nuclear missiles. Meanwhile, Gorbachev left the meeting stating, we could have signed an agreement today, if not for the SDI. Just 2 months later, in December, Thatcher turned face and publicly supported the SDI, saying she recognised the potential benefits for UK-US relations and NATO's strategic direction. She stated, we welcome President Reagan's initiative as a means to strengthen deterrence and promote stability. Now, given meeting one between Reagan and Gorbachev took place in October, and 2 months later, Thatcher does an about-face and supports SDI, then followed the quickest series of scientific deaths in our whole series. And is that coincidental? I don't think so. October, Reagan and Gorbachev meet. December, Thatcher supports SDI. January, two scientists are dead. February, an additional three scientists are dead. March, David Sands fills his car full of gasoline and drives into a cafe. April, two more scientists are dead. And we would and will go on. But I find it not coincidental in the slightest that after the initial meeting between Reagan and Gorbachev, and following Thatcher's backing of the US, these deaths began to pour in. And remember, when I started this show, I told you all at the very beginning, I'm not an investigative journalist. There will be no answers from me about this entire theory. There will be suggestions, there will be opinions, and there will be more theories. But I cannot give you any solid facts in terms of those conspiracy theories, if you will. I will say some things seem to be beyond a shadow of a doubt. But that concludes our recap from a geopolitical perspective about these deaths. Hopefully that gives us all a broader context as we move into our final three episodes and round out season one of True Crime Tuesday. But until next week, stay safe and take care.